Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, new Gallup poll out. This latest showing that Democrats are leading Republicans. Now 49% of people in this most recent survey by Gallup identify as Democratic voters or leaning towards the Democratic Party, as just 40% of Republicans identify as Republicans or leaning Republican. That is a 9% difference. That's the biggest it has been since the fourth quarter of 2012. All directions pointing towards the Democrats doing really well. Joe Biden's approval ratings high. Got some things done. A lot of talk about the future. Some problems on the horizon. And here to share some thoughts on, well, where things are going to take us. I've got our all-star panel of folks here to talk with us. I've got our good friend Sarah Burris, reporter over at Raw Story. Sarah, thanks for being here.
Hi.
I got our good friend Scott Dworkin, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition. Scott, thanks.
Hey.
And Kari Pennebaker, DNC Black Treasury Chairman. I'll get it out. Yes. Kari, thanks for being here.
Black Caucus Treasurer. Hey, thanks for having me on.
That's the word I was looking for. So what do you make of these numbers? This latest survey coming out by Gallup showing Democrats surging a little bit ahead. Is this a good sign? Let's start with you, Kari, since you're the DNC Black Caucus Treasury Chairman.
I think it definitely is a good sign. I think it shows that when people are receiving the benefits from the government, and when the government is doing the things that it's supposed to do, that it doesn't matter who you voted for. Those checks that the people got, those survival checks, were not only cashable by people who voted for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Republicans benefited from those survival checks just like Democrats do. And I think at some point people got to realize, like, you have to be able to put your political persuasion aside and look at what actually is helping you. Are there some things that Republicans might do that might help? Sure. But they tend to want to argue a lot about things that don't matter, like Dr. Seuss and stupid things like that, and make things up while we are actually trying to help make people's lives better. And I think that is reflective in the poll that you're seeing now.
No, I'm right there with you. Scott, you want to throw a thought in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's some people that aren't ready to admit that they're Democrats or that they support Democrats or identify as that. But it'll give it time, because this is a slope. There's been people that just been abandoning ship from the Republican Party or whatever we want to call it. I think that I'll remind folks that, you know, give it 6 months and Liz Cheney, Kinzinger, and Mitt Romney will take over the party. They're all going to slowly but surely go down with this ship, because especially people like Matt Gaetz, they're not going to have their loud leadership bench. And I mean, it really is in disarray. So I think that you're going to see this shift and continue to shift massively. At this point, I would not be shocked if it was a complete another blue wave in 2022, where it's expansion of the Senate even further, and then also add some more seats in the House. I really just don't see a route for them, because the stimulus that Scari mentioned, like, that's going to be around for years to come. That's going to be paying off in 2022 still, 2024 as well. So, and they voted against it. So good luck to them.
Yeah. Sarah, your thoughts?
I agree. And I think whenever we're talking, if we pass the damn infrastructure bill, we're talking about just an absurd amount of jobs and help that will come to individual communities in a way that people will see it. It will be a tangible success story that people will see in their daily lives. They'll experience. A lot of times whenever we spend money in government, it's sort of this obscure somewhere else out there, this is going on, and people, it doesn't really connect with folks. And so I think this infrastructure plan in particular is going to be huge for Democrats, because we know that Republicans don't want to support it.
No, and I'm right there with you. I'm right on that. But the question now takes us into, What if he can't get this done? You've got Joe Manchin, who has come out and said under no circumstances he's going to support any changes to the filibuster. He said, in fact, he wrote as much in a Washington Post op-ed, there is no circumstance in which I will vote to eliminate or weaken the filibuster. He said, the time has come to end these political games and to usher in a new era of bipartisanship where we find common ground on major policy debates facing our nation. So it doesn't sound like he's going to move on any of this stuff. He seems to think there's this fairyland of bipartisanship. I'm curious how you see this playing out, though.
So the thing about Joe Manchin is his position has never changed on this. This has been his consistent position the entire time. The one thing that he did say is that he would be fine moving to a talking filibuster. And what is strange to me is that that seemed like it was a flip whenever he said that. And I don't know that what he said in the post really contradicts that necessarily. I wonder if there is still move for that, because if we did go to a talking filibuster, I think that is the best way that Democrats win, because then Republicans have to defend their ideas and they have to defend why they don't want to support this. And then the American people can actually see what's going on and what they think and what they believe. And that is the best thing that could happen to Democrats, is just giving Republicans enough rope to hang themselves.
No, I'm right there with you. I want nothing more than to have Mitch McConnell and the rest of the no-sayers to have to stand up and say why they didn't support the survival checks, why they don't want workers to have the rights to organize, why they don't want an infrastructure plan, or as Marsha Blackburn put out, you know, why we don't want to take care of older folks. Scott, any thoughts on this Manchin thing? Is this new? Is this important? What do you think?
I think it's still a game. This way, you know, President Biden is in control more so than it would be, I guess, if it was a Republican on the fence. So I think that those two Joes are pretty close and they talk frequently. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, again, imagine the negotiation strategy that they have here is you go big and then you can negotiate it down from there. And it's going to end up in a place where it's above where we wanted it to be in the first place. So, you know, this is, I think it's still working and moving. I really just am sick of the one thing of the pageantry of the Senate. People are dying. People are starving. Get your job done. I mean, like, it's really ridiculous to act like some kind of Jim Crow kind of blockage. Oh, but the filibuster. It's like, shut up. Just like, no one cares about the filibuster. Like, it's crazy. It's maddening. I understand what they're saying, but American people won't get it. So you got to get stuff done or we won't. Democrats will lose seats in the Senate in 2022. They'll pay for it. Really,
I've said that from the beginning. We don't get this infrastructure bill pushed through, it's going to be a slaughter in 2022. And I don't care what you think about the survival checks right now. The reverberation from that infrastructure bill, if it doesn't get done, we got problems. Curry, thoughts?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that Joe Manchin is still, while he is relatively consistent on the issue of what he would like to do with the filibuster or not, the issue that he and others keep coming back to with wanting bipartisanship in the Senate is one that I find very interesting, especially from Joe Manchin. In 2013, Joe Manchin partnered with Pat Toomey from Pennsylvania to pass the Manchin-Toomey background check bill, which failed by as a result of them not being able to get past the filibuster threshold. They know full well what that game is like, right? They know that the parlor tricks that the folks in the Senate are playing, that they have no interest in having things work out well for the American people, nor do they have any interest in what bipartisanship really means. If you think about families that have a loved one that is shot and killed, do you think that they're gonna care whether or not the legislators that step up are doing so in a bipartisan fashion? They don't care. They just want the bills to be passed so lives can be saved. Do you think when people went and cast those checks the last couple of weeks, those survival checks, did they say, you know what, I can only cast this check if it's bipartisan? No. It's the American people, though, that are bipartisan. It's the folks in Congress that aren't. And I think they need to get to a place where they can reconcile the difference between what happens in those two chambers and what happens here in American streets. They seem to forget that the majority of people do not agree with that kind of behavior anymore. The last time, I mean, if you really thought about this and put it in context, the filibuster is rife with slavery and racism, right? Think about where it came from and what all the folks in the past did and how they used it to stop policies like the Civil Rights Act. Think about that. And they want to hold on to that. That is simply wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. And not only the Civil Rights Act, but any major labor reform, mm-hmm. any labor law changes they've used over the, at least in my lifetime, to stop any progress forward. But what do you say to the person, Curry, who goes, no, we can't do away with the filibuster because we may need it, because when Republicans take control again, we may get all of this horrible stuff that they've been wanting too. So we could become this country of wild swings in policy from one extreme to the next.
That is honestly, that is a very real possibility. But we're talking two different things, though. We're talking about how the Senate functions and how people are actually voting. So if you have more people that go out and vote, you're going to have fewer people who behave like Matt Gaetz did. You're going to have fewer people who behave like those crazy Republicans, like Ted Cruz does, right? When more people have access to the ballot, you have fewer people who behave like those folks do. When you get rid of things like gerrymandering, and you can have a fair representation of America within the halls of Congress, you have fewer crazy people behaving like that. You have less of a need for issues or things like the filibuster.
Sarah, you want to jump in?
I agree completely. This is one of those things where the country is in a much more stable, reasonable place than Congress is. Mm-hmm. And when you think about what Republicans need to do to raise the money that they need to run again, it's the furthest to the right. They have to appeal to that crazy base of people. And, you know, we were talking earlier about the difference between more Democrats and Republican registrants. Some of that too comes from the January 6th attacks, mm-hmm. where, some Republicans were disgusted and horrified. Some Republicans were pissed that their members didn't fight harder for Donald Trump. Both of them left the Republican Party as the result of it. And it's the weirdest sort of, I suppose, backlash against the Republican Party that I've ever seen in my life. But how that then turns into progress and legislation, I think, when it comes to stuff like really important bills that Republicans, that Democrats would try to pass and Republicans oppose, or really scary bills that Republicans would pass if they took over, that's the point, I think, of the talking filibuster. I think Democrats are very good at holding the floor. Right. Like I could see a very coordinated effort where Democrats just go one by one by one by one for something that is really honestly important to have or to fight against. And I think Democrats would do it. The thing about the filibuster is without it, it really does force bipartisanship. Mm-hmm. Because if there are, you know, you would have to have just a ton of Republicans to be able to get some of those things passed. And for, you know, a lot of Republicans, some of those bills are not, you know, it's going to hurt them if they voted for it. Yeah. So it really just depends on what the legislation is and how strong the Democrats are feeling that day. But I believe very strongly in how our caucus in the Senate would fight tooth and nail against some of that stuff. And if there's a talking filibuster, then I can see them holding the floor for days and days and days.
And I think that's how it should be. Mm-hmm. Mr. Smith going to Washington and holding the floor. But do you find it as interesting as I do, guys, and how Republicans have responded to the infrastructure bill? You saw the South Dakota governor come out and say that it's full of, you know, things that aren't infrastructure, like houses and pipes. You see Marsha Blackburn tweeting out a bunch of tweets about how $35 billion to address climate change isn't about infrastructure, and money to help our transportation, our public transportation systems, and to take care of our elder class, how none of that belongs there. Are you as interested in find it as bizarre as I do that they've taken the positions they have? Let's start with you, Scott.
Yeah, I mean, I don't find anything that they do bizarre anymore, you know. I try to not make it feel that way, because I don't want to normalize it. but it can be kind of troublesome. You know, they're just looking, someone's trying to take the leadership position in the Republican Party, and they're trying to do it in the weirdest ways possible, including, you know, odd tweets and weird statements about how infrastructure doesn't involve pipes or building homes. A lot of it doesn't make any sense to me, but, you know, a lot of what they do doesn't make any sense to me and to most people. So I'm not sure exactly what they're going for, if they're trying to destroy their party completely or what they're actually aiming for. Because right now, you know, it's something that 4 years ago, majority of them would have agreed with. So I'm just shocked that they don't want to invest in the American people. They don't want to invest in America. And they support Putin over Biden. So, like, got a lot of problems with this fake Republican Party. It's like the party of treason. I mean, like, I don't want to say that too commonly, obviously, with the former guy gone, but it really doesn't make any sense. That mixed with the insurrection, it's pretty clear that we have some traitors in Congress, and we need to slowly and methodically make sure that they are exposed for the frauds that they are, and starting with, obviously, Matt Gaetz and Marjorie Taylor Greene and some other folks going down the line, and we're investigating every single one of them. And I can tell you, if they smell bad, they always are bad. And so as we dig, you'll see more and more come out. And I think the truth will come out that these people are actually criminals.
The thing is I don't know when infrastructure stopped being nonpartisan, let alone bipartisan in Korea. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I find it interesting that you have a portion of elected Republicans who are anxious to be a part of the stupid caucus and just simply do things that it's clear, like, you don't have to simply just be against it because you're a Republican. You can add to something and try to make it better or whatever, but to simply act like the sky is not up, you know, I think some of them are trying to really appeal to the insurrectionist caucus of the country, that small little portion where they will accept anything these people tell them. They will accept, you know, anything Donald Trump will say, any lie that they'll say. I mean, I find it interesting that QAnon is not joining with Scott and going after Matt Gaetz, right? I mean, isn't that their whole thing?
Yeah.
But yeah, like they are so anti-Democrat that they will do things that are contrary to their own best interest. And I find that striking. And to me, like, these people are the same ones that say how patriotic they are. They'll get American flag tattoos on them, and they'll paint their guns in the colors of the American flags, but yet they won't do things to actually help their country. They'll say the things, but they won't do the things.
Right.
They'll do everything contrary to that. And I think it's very sad. And I think they have a few cheerleaders in the houses of Congress that are doing the things that they want. But the problem is that is a very small but yet vocal, extremely minority group.
No, you're right. We're going to take a quick break right here. On the other side of it, I want to get some thoughts on the, the president came out with some executive orders on guns. I want to get some of your thoughts on that and on the shootings and the stuff that's been going on around that. We're going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1947, and if you tried to make a telephone call that day, you might have been out of luck. During that time, telephone calls were connected by operators. 95% of the operators were women. The National Federation of Telephone Workers called for a strike against AT&T. The strike was one of the largest work actions by a majority female workforce in U.S. history. More than 300,000 women took off their headsets and walked off the job. Telephone service disruptions were widespread. According to the New York Times, the demands of the workers included a $12 per week raise. The union wanted to negotiate a nationwide wage scale. The workers also wanted a guaranteed pension minimum and more vacation time. The slogan for the strike was, "The voice with a smile is gone for a while." A while turned out to be a month. As the strike wore on, newspapers decried interruptions to the telephone service.
The day after the strike began, the New York Times editorial wondered, quote, whether essential public services should be subject to interruption by work stoppages growing out of labor disputes. In the end, the union did not win a national wage scale, and the wages continued to be settled at the local level. The next year, the National Federation of Telephone Workers had reorganized to form the Communication Workers of America as part of the CIO. Although the strike was largely not successful, it showed the potential power of women in the workforce.
Operator, but could you help me place this call?
Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So on Thursday, President Biden unveiled some executive action intended on addressing our gun violence problem. As look, we've had a couple more shootings. As we've come out of the pandemic, the mass shootings are back. You had something in Texas. You also had the Colorado shooting. Another shooting in South Carolina, where an ex-football player goes out and shoots a doctor, his wife, their grandkids, and then himself. Lots of things on guns, and here to share some thoughts, our all-star panel to share some thoughts on the president's executive action. Again, Curry Pennebaker, the chairman of the DNC's Black Caucus. He is the treasurer there, co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, Scott Dworkin, and Raw Stories reporter Sarah Burris. Guys, thanks so much for sticking around.
Thanks for having us on, man.
So let's go through the executive actions. We're going after ghost guns, something I guess you can make at home, something you get off the internet. Is this worth the heat that he's going to get and enraging the right? Because slippery slope, is this worth it? Curry, let's start with you.
Yeah, and I appreciate you coming to me first, because this is my primary issue, although I have taken a brief sabbatical from the movement of gun violence prevention to work on my mental health. I've been doing this for 8 years, risked my life, my safety, advocate for this issue and advocate for my mom who shot and killed herself. So I have taken a step back, and I was not very vocal about the executive actions this week for personal reasons. But I will say this, that there are a lot of gun violence survivor families who have worked tirelessly, myself included, to bring this moment to fruition here. There are a lot of issues that Joe Biden and Kamala and the administration are trying to address these executive actions that will literally save people's lives. I think there are some other things they should also do, but at no point can you ever say, is saving someone's life worth the effort to do so? Because I can assure you, when Christmas comes around and there's an empty chair at your table where your loved one should be, but they can't because they were shot and killed, there's nothing you wouldn't do to prevent that from happening to yourself or to someone else in your community. So I'm glad that Joe Biden is willing to do the hard work of addressing gun violence prevention. I'm glad we have a government that is saying that gun violence is a epidemic in our country, and they're taking it seriously, and they're trying to do the right thing to save people's lives. I just wish that they would also include in that effort the effort to reduce gun suicides, which are 2/3 of all gun death. And for those who might come back and say, well, Curry, your mom shot and killed herself. Sure, but the bullet that exploded my mom's head did not do so peacefully. If you read the World Health Organization's definition of violence, they also include self-inflicted violence, which gun violence, gun suicides also is. But overall, I'm glad that Fred Guttenberg, my dear friend Fred, was able to go to the White House and experience this moment and be able to celebrate the effort that he's made, along with Lucy McBath and her son Jordan being shot and killed, and Fred's daughter Jamie being shot and killed, and all of the other families that have worked tirelessly and have used their pain to advocate for this day to come forward. My heart is going to always be with them, and the last thing I would ever do is advocate against them.
No, but you know, there are some who are saying that these executive orders don't go far enough. The ghost guns were something. I guess there was some action against concealed assault weapons. Is that it, or does it go further?
I mean, you can always, with any policy, you can always say X, Y, and Z policy does not go far enough. It will never be enough. And that's the job of advocates, is to continue to push those who are elected to keep doing better and better. You got to have a starting point, though, right? You have to be able to start somewhere, and considering where we were for the last 4 years, you know, the very first action that the prior occupant took was something to allow those who were incapable of handling their own finances to be able to still buy guns. That's the very first thing that man did, right? So here we are, 60 plus days into his administration, and one of the very first things he's doing is taking substantive actions on gun violence prevention. And again, you can always say X, Y, and Z thing isn't enough, but you have to have a starting point. Right. The fact that they're willing to take this on this early shows that this issue is one that matters to them. And as I would always say about Joe Biden when I was advocating for him during the primary and general election, is this isn't a checkbox issue for them. If you look at the background on my screen right now, that's Joe Biden hearing my story as a gun violence survivor and literally placing his hand on my heart, telling me that all of the work he had done about gun violence prevention over the last 30 plus years. And in that moment, this man made me feel like I was the only person in the world that mattered to him. And I know that other of my fellow gun violence survivors feel the same way, given the action that this man has taken.
I would say too, to your point about it not being enough, there is only so much a president can do.
Right.
An executive action is not the same as legislation. And we saw with what happened with President Obama and DACA and the immigration legislation, where that ended up in court real fast and it got struck down. So there's really only so much that a president can do through executive actions. So much of this has to happen in Congress. And again, to go back to the stupid filibuster and Joe Manchin, we got to find a Republican who is who believes in gun sense. Nobody's trying to take anybody's guns away. We spent 8 years with Barack Obama. Nobody had their gun taken away. But a lot of these issues, I think, you know, if we can just find one Republican to counteract Joe Manchin's NRA worship, we could get there. But it's going to be a tough lift. One of the other things too in the executive orders is the gun hole loophole. And every Republican I saw on Twitter was just losing their mind, being like, oh, this isn't about gun shows. This is about private individuals selling weapons and who aren't licensed to do so. Those are the ones who we're trying to target, and that's not all gun shows. And it's like, dude, have you ever actually been to a gun show? Do you know people who have gone to gun shows? It's like half of the people selling guns there aren't licensed to do so. There is no background check done for non-licensed vendors. And that doesn't happen online. That doesn't happen. So a lot of these places are just, you know, where you buy stuff from people and there is no background check, then it's just, it is the biggest loophole. You can drive a train through it.
No, and it's an excellent point, because I know people who have literally bought guns at a Walmart parking lot from some guy out of a van.
Yeah.
And you go, is that the best way? Should we be able to do that? I mean, I can't just buy a car and not have it registered or have, but a gun, I can go buy a gun from anybody in a parking lot and nobody's looking over it. I don't know that I'm okay with that.
And you should not be okay with that. I don't mean to interrupt you, Scott, but here's the thing about this issue, that it's one of the very few issues that we allow the slippery slope argument to come in and actually dominate the conversation. And we should not be doing that anymore. Mm-mm. Because I can assure you that my mom's casket is not moving out of the grave site that she's in. There is no slippery slope for her anymore, right? We need to decide as a country that this issue is real. And we need to stop pretending that there's some boogeyman hiding around the corner waiting to steal your guns from you. Folks need to wake up and realize that is nothing more than a very, very effective marketing ploy. It is a very effective way to get people to simply buy more guns. And I think if people were honest about this and simply looked at the NRA and said, wait a minute, we give you all this money for our dues and all the other nonsense we give you, yet you got Wayne on yachts, right? He's buying fancy clothes while y'all over here in the backwoods thinking you're prepping for the next Civil War. They're lying to you. They're literally lying to you. And there are people dying in the streets needlessly. I wish America was a much more honest country. We sell this idea to the rest of the world how great we are, but yet we don't act like it. We pretend that we're going to kill each other, that we're going to engage in the next Civil War simply because you don't like something. We had one. They lost. Now we got folks coming to the North with their Confederate flags as if they forgot which side they're on. I am mind-boggled. It is beyond how we have been so far gone now, allowed this stuff to happen, and allowed these lies to keep perpetuating. It is beyond me how this keeps happening.
Scott, jump in there.
No, you can keep on. I think one of the things that y'all have touched on is that the messaging is important, and other people being able to parrot that messaging. So when President Biden comes out and says we need to ban all assault weapons because civilians shouldn't have assault weapons, like, it's logic coming back out in the I guess in the front of everything, and it's a really great start to cracking doors open. It allows other governors to start talking about it without having as much pressure on them, just directly on them, and you know, again, it gets things started. And usually a lot of people haven't had the bravery to actually have a conversation, at least, and he just jumped right into it. And I know that a lot of people like Fred had mentioned how appreciative they were of actually someone listening and actually someone taking action and someone having a plan. You know, words matter. Words from a president absolutely matter. And I think that, you know, everybody's right here that the bottom line is the proof is in the numbers, that the less guns that are on the streets, the less people that are going to die, that are going to get killed, that are going to get hurt by gun violence, because that's how it works. And if you look at any other country in the world, you can see the direct problem. This is not what the founders dreamed of. If you want to go and take your musket and, you know, get 50 muskets or whatever you want to do with that, that's what they were referring to. They were not referring to you taking, you know, a machine gun or an assault rifle and taking it for fun to Subway because you want to impose on others people's rights to live free. And I think we need to remind ourselves that, like, I don't think that that guns should rule over our freedom. And that's the key component here. And they're just cosplayers, people that are playing dress up. And it's really just, we need to stop with the whole game.
No, I'm right there with
bring
you.
Bring back the musket. Right, yeah.
But the guns don't kill people, guys. You know, people do. It's not the guns. The gun's just a tool.
I feel like the gun helps. If you point at somebody and yell bang,
I've done
that's
that.
Not going to kill anybody unless they're really, unless they're dodgy on the heart. You know, that's
When I hear that argument, I often tell people, go try to cut your lawn with a pair of scissors.
Yeah.
And see how much you would rather have a lawnmower. A gun simply makes it easier to kill people.
Right.
Right. You don't have a whole string of mass stabbings for a reason, because it requires proximity. Right. It requires you to be close to people, but for the people you're trying to stab to be slow. Right. But with a gun, you can mow down anybody. Right. You are more likely to shoot and kill yourself than an assailant. You're more likely to cause harm to yourself. But yet we have this notion in this country that gun ownership is akin to patriotism. It's not. It really is not. And I wish we would stop fetishizing guns to the point of, like, where they're almost elevated to a godlike status, right? Like, you, freedom equals a gun. It does not, because I can assure you, my mom has been locked in a casket for 41 years. She's not getting it.
Now, you know, mental illness being a huge part of gun violence, I look at this tragic story that I believe happened on Wednesday. Former NFL player Philip Adams allegedly shot two people who were repairing an air conditioner outside of this doctor's office, killed the doctor, killed his wife, their two grandchildren, and then eventually killed himself. Not quite sure what the motive is at this point, but the family's saying, hey, you know, he could have had some head trauma from playing in the NFL because he's never been the same since he played. You know, how would restrictions on ownership of guns have maybe helped prevent this tragedy? Is there a way to prevent this, or is this just, hey, we're a gun culture, we got to live with this?
There would be. One of the things that is in the executive orders is to provide a framework for all 50 states to implement red flag laws. So if someone is showing signs that they might be a danger to themselves or someone else, it's your immediate family that should be able to see that first and then make an appeal to whether it's a local magistrate, the sheriff, the court, to have your guns temporarily removed from your possession so that you have the time to go get the help that you need. So if something like that were in place, they could have gotten his guns out of his possession and been able to save, five lives, something like that?
Yeah.
That is something that has been used all over the country, and it saves so many people's lives. But yet, people act like it's an infringement on rights, but it's not. That's another lie they want to tell.
Sarah, you want to jump in?
No, I agree with you. I think when you talk about, especially the idea of CTE, and I don't know the degree to which. You know, you don't find out if you have CTE until after you've passed and they can autopsy your brain. We donated my grandfather's brain to Boston University, to the CTE program, because he'd always been a little bit dingy. That was the only real way I could describe it, is he seemed very Forrest Gumpy to me. And whenever he was in high school, he played football with one of those leather cloth helmets. And then he was also a Golden Gloves boxer. So the man has been hit in the head so many times. And so I've learned so much over the last several years about this idea of CTE and how it can impact your mental and emotional fitness. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, red flag laws. But one of the things that drives me crazy with Republicans is they try and use this idea that mental health is the problem. It's not the gun, mm-hmm. it's the mental health. And it's then... My question then is like, well, then why don't you do something about mental health? I can't help but notice that you're not fighting to allocate any additional funding to help people with mental health illnesses, which is a genuinely important problem in the country. And you would think if they actually did care about this, that the NRA would be the first ones out there being like, you know what, we need better mental health laws so that we can then give guns to crazy people.
And one of the things that I often say to people is that here in Wisconsin, it is easier to get a gun than it is to get your first mental health care appointment. Here in Wisconsin, you can get a gun the same day you pass a background check, same day purchase. Try to get a mental health care appointment today. Try that, right? You're, 4 or 6 weeks out?
Yeah.
And that's if you can afford the health insurance premium.
Yeah.
If right? you can afford that's, it. No, that's... Yeah. It's right. crazy. It's crazy what we've done in this country. I know in Pennsylvania, they shut down all the state mental health hospitals and all of that stuff. And we use our jail system to deal with our mentally yep. ill. But all in all, good stuff, I think, from the president on this. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, going to get into the top story of the day. Matt Gaetz could be arrested by the time we're done. Who knows? But quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Their slogan was Justice for Janitors. Their chant was Si se puede, yes we can. Their image was a red and black poster of a mop raised high in a clenched fist. 3,000 members of SEIU Local 1877 marched in the streets of downtown Los Angeles. Many of the marchers were Latina women. Some had their children with them. On this day in labor history, the year was 2000. The massive protest marked the third day of their strike for a better life. The janitors were some of the poorest paid workers in Los Angeles. Their average wage was only $6.70 an hour. This was well below the janitorial wage of most other major cities in the U.S. Picketing workers targeted downtown office buildings. 18 contractors oversaw the janitorial services in these buildings. The workers demanded $1 an hour wage increase for 3 years. The contractors refused to negotiate. Several prominent politicians and religious leaders supported the strike. Finally, after 3 weeks, the strike was settled. The union won a 25% wage increase over 3 years. Although it was a sizable victory, it fell short of the hoped goal for $3 an hour. Jose Chayas, a shop steward and member of the negotiating committee, explained, "Even as united as we were, every nickel was difficult." The fight in Los Angeles was just one battle in the long Justice for Janitors struggle. Since 1985, SEIU has been working on the janitors campaign, which includes nearly a quarter of a million workers. In the next 2 years, 130,000 janitors in 33 cities across the nation will negotiate their contracts. Very likely, this will include janitors in a city near you. Will you support their fight for justice?
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I think everyone's waiting for the shoe to drop in Matt Gaetz, representative from Florida, to find himself in a shiny new pair of bracelets around both hands, preferably behind his back. And I'm sure that he will not be face down on the ground with someone's knee in the back of his neck. But I got to tell you, if I were the 17-year-old girl's father, I might want to be that person. And as I've said, we'd have a very long conversation with very few words. But here to share some thoughts on the Gaetz situation, the attempt to get the preemptive pardon, the fact that his buddy's now, I guess, cutting a deal on sex trafficking and a whole bunch of other things, and now the House Ethics Committee about to jump into an investigation. I've got our all-star panel, Kari Pennebaker, Scott Dworkin, and Sarah Burris. Guys, thanks for sticking around.
Yeah.
Of course.
So let's start with Matt Gaetz. Let's go with you, Scott, first, since This is where you want to go.
I'm getting here. I'm ready. I'm ready for you.
How soon? What's the countdown to jail time?
Well, his second senior staffer resigned today. The House Ethics Probe, the fact that the House Ethics Probe is happening at all means that they have more evidence that we do not know about. Likely, it would be a staffer coming forward with evidence, or somebody who does not want to be linked at it whatsoever. I would guess the staffer route, where someone's either a whistleblower or it's one of the two that had resigned. You also have the Joel Greenberg, who's the accused sex trafficker, a friend of Gaetz, who they both joined last week and released a voicemail from State Rep Anna Eskimani, who was a Democrat, barely knows Joel Greenberg and Matt Gaetz, and they called him like a bunch of frat guys, being like, "Hey, you're the future of the Democratic Party. Just wanted to hang out. Let us know what you're doing." Like, very weird. They've met her like twice before. And so she was like, "I don't understand what this was. Why would they actually leave this voicemail? It was just so creepy." So there's, on top of that, the $900 that have been paid to three different women via Joel Greenberg, where Matt Gaetz Venmo'd that money to Joel Greenberg, who then sent it to three different women, the exact amount, $300, $300, $300 split up. And he said, say it's for school, something like that. And I guess the flipping part of that would be, a part of him spending campaign money on hotels and for sex workers, using cash towards that as well from the campaign. We're looking at 40 federal charges potentially here, if not more. He's going to be arrested. I have no doubt about that. The way that he gets arrested, when he gets arrested, it's going to be soon. There's no way that they can really keep going further with this, especially with the public scrutiny. This is just going to get worse. And if the FBI and DOJ know something about his hideous background, they need to get I got to be careful with my words because I know their lawyers are watching. This potential sex trafficker, Matt Gaetz, I think that he needs to, this is going to get worse. It's always going to get worse. And the last thing I'll say is that no one resigns from the Hill. You don't resign from the Hill. You definitely don't resign from senior staff positions on the Hill from one of the youngest members of Congress. And you sure as heck don't do that without having a plan in your exit. And no one else is going to hire you right away. No one's going to take you in right away. So you got to have a plan. And so resigning means that something's up beyond the pale. So I again, I would give him maybe 2 weeks and then he's arrested. He's not going to, you know, he may be arrested and he'll stay in Congress and they'll do an ethics investigation and then they'll have to vote to actually remove him from Congress, which I think they would expel him at that point. But there would have to be some evidence that's undoubtedly true. So anyways, thank you for letting me share.
No, anybody else want to jump in on the wonders of Wonder Boy Matt Gaetz and his best buddy, Donald Trump?
Well, the thing about Greenberg in particular is he's taking a plea deal. Like, he's pleading guilty.
Right.
And nobody pleads guilty if there is a case that could possibly save them. He's not going to plead guilty unless there is a deal. And so I think that to me indicated that he was flipping. Which makes sense to me because there are so many charges against Joel Greenberg that I don't know how long he's going to be in prison, but it's going to be a while. And so it would not surprise me if he flipped so that he could try and get out in, like, you know, 30 to 50 years instead of the rest of his life in prison.
Right.
Yeah. Everybody can be a charge. So, like, one payment charge, another payment charge.
Yeah.
It can.
Every single payment is a charge.
Yeah. And he's being charged with sex trafficking of a minor. That is a big one. Stalking, bribery, and defrauding the Paycheck Protection Program. So, not an all around great guy.
And there's this whole slate of ID theft because he was creating fake IDs off of other people's IDs. I mean, there's just a bunch of weird little things that I think ultimately will add up to a lot in addition to the trafficking and the sex with the minors. With Matt Gaetz in particular, from what I understand, nobody likes him. Not even his own party likes him. And I was making a joke earlier this week because John Boehner, you know, was in the news for cursing at a bunch of his colleagues. And here's the thing about John Boehner. If John Boehner was in charge, Matt Gaetz wouldn't be there right now.
Right.
Because John Boehner would find someone to give information to get to the press to get rid of him. That's how John Boehner used to work.
Yep.
That's how a bunch of crazy stories about, if you remember, what's his name? Well, Matt Foley, but remember the guy with the Downton Abbey office?
Oh, yeah.
That came from John Boehner. A lot of people don't know that, but he was the one who basically was like, this is a thing, please go forward. I think about the way the leadership works, and it's just like it doesn't surprise me that Paul Ryan was like, screw this, you know, and was like, I'm out. And you just got to wonder, like, how messed up is Kevin McCarthy to think that he can keep this under wraps and make this somehow either go away or look okay or whatever. But I mean, I think that is the Trumpism of the Republican Party at this point.
Yeah, I mean,
Matt Gaetz is sort of in the image of Trump, and he's trying to spin this like Donald Trump did. It's not going to be successful because Matt Gaetz isn't Donald Trump.
But you brought up Paul Ryan, which now Paul Ryan looks like a genius by getting out when he did. I mean, what speaker bails
right?
at the height of his power? Who bails and goes, I'm good, and leaves? I mean, Korea, I mean, that's your state of Wisconsin. He's kind of, I was not a Paul Ryan fan, but he's kind of looking really bright on this front.
Well, let's be careful not to give Paul Ryan too much credit. Paul Ryan, and you know, not to, I don't want to sound too cynical, but Paul Ryan is not a decent human being. I think within the political space, I think in the personal space, he might be. But within politics, he did a lot of things. I heard a lot of people and gave the moniker of the takers versus the makers. And I think that really did put a lot of people on the short end of the stick. So that's Paul Ryan. I mean, I'm glad he is no longer in government. And with this Matt Gaetz thing, it couldn't have happened to a worse person. You know, the last segment we talked about gun violence, there is a clip that is very well seen about how Matt Gaetz treated Fred Guttenberg and another father from Parkland at a hearing about gun violence when Gaetz tried to turn it into building the wall, right? I mean, he's just simply one of those people, you're like, you have no real value to add to anything other than to make it bad. That's what he wants, right? He thrives off controversy. There was an article written about him about how he likes to be the antagonist, right? He likes this kind of attention. And again, just like Donald Trump, except as Sarah said a minute ago, he's not Donald Trump. He doesn't have the power Trump has. He doesn't have the following Trump has. He doesn't have the money or the fake money that Trump has. And I think at this point, he may have reached a level of depravity that even the crazy Republicans are like, oh, this might maybe be a bridge too far.
Maybe a little bit. And that's a good point. But ultimately, I look at him and he is the proverbial man from Florida. There he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If there was a picture to define what physically what smarmy looked like, that's Matt Gaetz.
So I guess the big question I have now is, because he's supposedly one of the keynote speakers at the Women for America First summit this weekend at the Doral Country Club that the former guy owns. Does he give the big speech?
Oh, hell yeah. Of course he is. I mean, and that's the thing, is Women for America First supports Donald Trump, who, I mean, you want to talk about smarmy, alleged rapist, you know, serial sexual harasser and general disgusting human being. You know, they supported him. I don't know if they supported Roy Moore, but it wouldn't surprise me if they supported him too.
Yeah.
I mean, this is really genuinely the party of sexual assault and child abuse. That's what we have seen in the last 4 years.
Yeah, and consider what Democrats have done. Like when we ran out the senator from Minnesota, names
Al Franken
right now. Al Franken, right? Over allegations, I think that was just inappropriate touching. Kiss or something like that.
He didn't actually touch her. He pretended like he was going
to
touch.
Pretended to touch her, right? And this is sex trafficking of minors, and they're like, I don't know though. But would we allow Al Franken to keynote any event during that whole thing? Of course not, because we're not stupid. But they are. These are the same people who nominated Roy Moore. By the way, he made it through their primary. Right. And he still had a chance this time around. It is beyond me how we allow that party to own the space of family values and how we allow them to talk about like being pro-life and pro-family. And we don't like gay marriage because we're so pro-marriage. No, you're not. They're not. They really don't care because they elected Donald Trump and they think everything you have those women. Who the women first and all that, wearing shirts that say Trump can grab me by the anytime. Mm-mm. There's something fundamentally wrong with people who behave like that and excuse it when it's their guy, but are hell-bent on stopping other people when they do it. Yeah. They're just simply hypocrites.
I'm with you. So, Scott, there's only been one Republican that I know of thus far, and that's Illinois Republican Adam Kinzinger, who has come out and said he's got to resign. Do you see this growing, especially in light of potentially some, you know, this ethics charge?
I'd say by Sunday of this weekend, you should hear from about 10 more. It'll be along the lines of the people who voted for impeachment, the second round of impeachment. And then you'll see it expand from there. But I would say most Republicans are never going to call for his resignation publicly. Most of them want him to just disappear into the night. And that's just not going to happen. This is going to stretch out for a year, if not more.
So last question on this before I move on to the next thing. I was against the Democrats taking Marjorie Taylor Greene off of the Education and Labor Committee because I believe that was a Republican problem. They should have had the deal with their trash. You could disagree with me all you want, but that was my view on it. That's a Republican problem. I see Gaetz as a Republican problem as well. Do you see this as something the Republicans have to deal with, or should Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats move to have him expelled?
Well, I think I kind of get where you're coming from in that the Republican leadership should take the lead on that. The problem is that you don't really have Republican leadership. And because they don't, the Democrats are the ones that have to step up and lead. I mean, I believe all of the New York delegation asked for or demanded that Cuomo step down, right? Mm-hmm. But yet you have only one Republican talking about Matt Gaetz. If Republicans fail to lead, that's what Democrats will do. We will take the stand and make sure that we don't have a sexual predator in positions of power like that. Marjorie Taylor Greene should not even be allowed to walk in Congress. So the fact that she was taken off the Education Committee, the fact that someone thought she was eligible for it is beyond me by itself. But I expect Nancy Pelosi to do her job because Kevin McCarthy refuses to.
I would actually like to see them sort of sit back and not and let the Republicans screw this up. just for my own satisfaction, I would love for the Democrats to be like, you know what, we're just going to wait a week or two and see if Republicans do the right thing.
That's your problem.
And as they fail, I think we then utilize that to be able to then justify coming in and saying, you know what, since you do not consider sex trafficking a minor to be a problem, we want to talk about how that, you know, is a concern that Americans probably have, and that Matt Gaetz needs to go.
No, I'm right there with you. And on the Marjorie Taylor Greene thing, I wanted her on the Education Committee because I want her to say a bunch of dumb stuff, blather on, and then everyone look at her and go, we need more education funding. Exhibit A. And to me, that's, you know, having her just be the most ridiculous and not what we've done is created a martyr out of her in a sense. And that was always my concern. She's a Republican problem. That's they should have had to deal with her. But Scott, I wanted to get your thought.
No, I disagree because obviously we ran the campaign to get her off those committees. But I would say
and you see very successfully. So good on you.
She made me angry, personally, and I took it personal. And then I saw her attacks. I started researching her, and we released. Bevy 30 or so videos, which I don't regret any of them, and each of them get about 1 million views or so. There are videos of her using the R word to refer to people with autism. There's a video of her standing outside in front of the Capitol saying that we have to fight for this the day before the insurrection. She came out from the White House, a planning meeting for January 6th. She was heavily involved with the planning and the inviting of the people there. She's one of the biggest traitors that's ever walked in our country ever. And I won't let that person have a megaphone. And they were going to gain a larger megaphone if they kept on the legitimate part of them. And there had to be some kind of repercussions. And what could we have done? We didn't have many options. And so we started with that. We moved to expulsion. It's now a bill filed, her potential expulsion. There has to be consequences to people. I understand that whole thing of okay, let's not amplify her. So what we do to counter that narrative is when we know she's doing an action that's going to make her trend, we are ready to respond and we are not going to stay silent. That's where we get in trouble. That's where we get another former guy. And so we need to make sure that we don't lift them up when they are not even in the news whatsoever, right? We don't want to do that. And then when they are in the news, we need to remind people who she really is.
Now, what do you do? What do you do if she's reelected in 22?
Then we keep on pushing and we will keep on making sure that she is the spokesperson for the Republican Party as long as she's in their party.
So to wrap this up, we're going to take the bets on arrest. Within the next 2 weeks, do you think Matt Gaetz gets arrested? Let's start with you, Scott. I think you're pretty...
I go long. I always go long. What I say in Rush, I was in the next few years. This one, I don't want to get people to get too excited. Sometimes things take time within the next month. But I mean, this is a lot of stuff very quickly. Yeah. And so I would be shocked if there's no meat that comes out over this weekend. The questions that I'm being asked by journalists right now, it's clear that there's something coming out.
Three thoughts.
I think he will. It's a matter of time. I don't know how quick. And I think he is going to tear the Republican Party apart, trying to be as defiant as he normally is. And that part I'm here for. It's just that I hate the fact that there are going to be lives that are destroyed in the process who don't deserve it.
Sarah, last thought, quick.
I agree too. Like, this is something that has actually been going on since before March. It was March whenever the extortion plot happened. So by March, that whole conversation was all over the Justice Department. So people who weren't involved in that investigation knew what was going on. So this has been a piece of an investigation that's gone on for a very long time. And I think that's why we're starting to see this move very quickly now.
There you go. Good stuff. Guys, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much to our all-star panel, Karee, Scott, Sarah. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you've missed any part of our hour, make sure you get the podcast there at thericksmithshow.com. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'd love to hear your thoughts. Do you think Matt Gaetz gets the shiny bracelets? Do we get them out of Congress? And do we get something pushed through in the next week or so on infrastructure? Lots and lots to talk about. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.